We go around and around and around and around. And maybe before we were through, if you were a rock and roll record, I know they'd sell a million of you. I know they'd sell a million of you. I know they'd sell a million of you.
Cheese, please. Your weekly sample of the wacky, the warped, and the weird was produced by Snarf Dude and Daffodil. But was originally created by Snarf Dude and Moondog for Scottsdale and Productions. Drop by the website anytime online at www.cheezeplease.com. I'm Uncle Skeeter, inviting you back next week as we help to spread the cheese.
Thank you for supporting our annual fundraising campaign. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you for helping us rise higher and reach further.
Hi, my name is Lowell, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser Campus Radio.
Would you give me a beat?
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. CJSF 90.1 FM, diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca.
Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. Being sexually abused as a kid is defined as a childhood acute experience. In other words, the abuse impacts and shapes a young person's life going forward. This includes mental and physical health, interpersonal relationships, and general well-being. Ben Roy is a comedian and the lead screamer of Arson Charge. Ben was sexually abused at a Catholic summer camp when he was 7 years old. Life since then has been an intense struggle, one that has influenced his comedy and music. Like many, punk rock became a place of solace for Ben. It gave him the permission to scream at his abusers, to scream at a church that betrayed him, and to scream at the ills of society. His comedy became an extension of that, using humor to process the pain. I can say that Ben is strong and brave for what he's made it through, and that's the truth, but his abuse does not define him. As a person who experienced childhood sexual abuse myself, talking to Ben felt like an act of solidarity.
My name is Ben Roy. I'm a comedian and a musician. I play in a band called Arson Charge, and it's based out of Denver. And I also play in another punk rock band called Spells. I've been playing in Spells for about 12 years. Arson Charge for about a year. Our album, it's called The Dying Light. I got into music before I ever did anything. I started playing music. I was probably 14 or 15 years old. And a lot of it was for my mental health. Music was the first avenue that I found where it was okay to express my sadness and my emotions and vulnerability in a manner that got me congratulated for it. I grew up in Maine in a very rural environment where you weren't supposed to show a lot of emotion. Men aren't conditioned to talk about their feelings. That was always just cutting me down for it. But playing punk rock and playing hardcore was the first time where I was allowed to express those emotions and allowed to express my anxiety and feelings of depression and vulnerability and fear. And it was cool because I was screaming it and I was making it. And so it was really the first outlet I ever had to expressing how I felt. I haven't felt comfortable in my skin since I was 9 or 10 years old. And so music has been therapy, art therapy for over 30 years now. And still to this day, if I'm writing a song, if I'm feeling a certain way, or if I'm struggling with something, or I'm mentally chewing on something, writing a song is still the easiest way for me to convey that.
We all have that punk rock moment in our lives where we first were introduced to a certain band or came across a show. Do you remember what that moment was for you?
Oh, yeah. Like it was yesterday. I was still in middle school, so I don't know exactly how old, probably 11 or 12, but we were skateboarders, and we were skateboarding outside of a football game in the parking lot.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I may have even been in fifth grade, but I think it was like sixth grade. And I was listening to a lot of rap and hip hop because it was at the time that like Yo MTV Raps was super popular. And I remember skateboarding, and this older kid from a different school was skateboarding in the parking lot too. And we started talking to him, and I was like, yo, that's dope. And I was like, you know, talking like that. And then I remember him being like, you need to listen to this. And he gave me the Violent Femmes. And I'll never forget, that was my first into it, was Blister in the Sun.
Let me go on.
And I was like, whoa, this is awesome. I'd not heard music like that being in Central Maine. That wasn't something I was ever exposed to. And so at that point, I started listening to that and then watching all of the MTV videos that were closer to that. That's when I got into like Sonic Youth, Dinosaur Jr., Bad Religion was being played at that time.
Yeah.
It got me going to like record stores to look for more obscure stuff. And I think for me, and I'm sure for a lot of people my age, the like real big turn came with Epitaph releasing the first Punk-O-Rama. And that's when I started hearing like Rancid and Gas Huffer was on it,
yeah.
And Wayne Kramer and No Effects. Like that really like opened my eyes at that point. I was like, this is the music I've been looking for. Definitely a cloud parting moment for sure.
When you were young, it sounds like you were dealing with some depression and anxiety, probably quite a young age. Do you remember how that manifested itself during those years of being in school and skateboarding and punk rock?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've talked publicly about this. I grew up Catholic. I grew up in a very devout Catholic family. We're French Canadian, so Franco-American, living in Maine, and the church is everything. My uncle was a Jesuit priest, and we had a couple members of clergy in our family. So And I was sent to a Catholic summer camp when I was 7 years old. And while I was there, I was sexually abused. We moved to Maine from New Hampshire when I was 8, right around that time. And that's when I started noticing hypochondria.
Yeah.
That's what first started for me as a form of OCD and anxiety, was like I would obsess over my health even at a young age. I always thought I had like appendicitis. I cut myself on a nail one time. I thought I had tetanus. And I mean, it's not like, oh, I thought I had it. Like I would stay home from school. I would literally like obsess over things, like with tetanus to like my jaw hurt. I believed my jaw was locking up. Mm-hmm. And appendicitis, I thought I was dying of appendicitis numerous times. Anybody who's dealt with those types of compulsive behavior and thinking, your parents are always, and family is always like, he's just quirky, or that's how he is. I don't think they fully grasp how troubling it is and how exhausting it is to manage thinking like that throughout a day. I remember it starting in grade school. And then I remember having now what I know to be symptoms of anxiety, heart fluttering, tightness in my stomach, shortness of breath for no reason, you know, just they would just come on. But it really wasn't until I think I was 15 years old. I think I was a freshman in high school. I had a massive panic attack. I ran from class. I ran home from my school. I was out of school for a while because they kept coming. I sort of always struggled with my anxiety and depression.
I like what you said about how no one can really know what's going on internally with somebody, because we were talking about that last night at my support group. It's like people around you, like, why didn't they say anything? Why didn't they get to me any help? Well, I think it's almost impossible sometimes to tell that someone's struggling when they're at that level and maybe not like in an emergency or whatever, or a full crisis. They're dealing internally with this stuff, but until something really extreme happens, who knows? You know,
yeah.
It's not a society where we're taught to delve into people's personal issues, or oh, they're acting a bit quirky or weird. Well, we're not about to sit them down with an intervention.
Yeah, and I think it, even more so in the 80s. And for me, part of the story of what had happened to me is that when I was 10, I told my parents what had happened. But their reaction was so, I just belted out some stuff that had happened while we were eating a dinner, and I was 10, and I saw the reaction on my parents' face, and I realized, oh, this is a big deal. And my parents didn't know what to do. The church was everything. And there wasn't an open dialogue in the 80s about this kind of abuse. The church scandal hadn't really broken at that point. So my parents didn't know what to do. So they just sort of froze, and they opted to like not do anything. And I think from that point on, my mental health just fluctuated a lot more after that for a lot of other reasons. But I think it's also important in the context of my own personal journey through this, that time, you know, I'm 46 years old. The conversation wasn't as open about it back then, you know, and especially in religious communities, you didn't dare poke the Catholic Church. They were ubiquitous. They were everywhere in our community, you know, so.
So when you came out at 10 and talked about that with your family and saw the reaction, did you sort of clam up and not talk about it for a long time? Or?
Yeah. And we now know that's what kids do. They kind of test the waters. And what that sort of did then was put me on a path of like, oh, well, this is bad and shameful, as the Catholic Church does very well, as fills you with guilt and shame.
Yeah.
And you just hide that. And then I chose, because I was so afraid of my own masculinity, like I felt like in an area where masculinity is currency in a small town, like where I grew up, and you live in a rural area, you know, I mean, growing up, I didn't want to be referred to as gay. Now that's not a negative connotation at all. Like to be part of the queer community is amazing and part of a great group of people and people I love. But when I was younger, I was terrified of that because In a small town, masculinity is currency. Because of that, I overcompensated and I hung out with people who were aggressive and who I thought could protect me in a way that my parents didn't. You know, I got really into skateboarding and punk rock, but as a lot of people know, there is the positive, socially conscious, socially aware version of punk rock. And then there's the nihilistic, equally as problematic, equally as misogynistic other side to that.
Yeah.
I hung out with both sides and I saw a lot of violence and a lot of small-minded ignorance.
I was sort of the same. You're into these bands and, you know, you're into Dagle Abortions and, you know, like they're like,
yeah,
so extreme and they're singing about things and you're like, yeah, SOD wasn't the one. Oh yeah, man, let's listen to SOD. And obviously with SOD, there's a lot of satire, but still really harsh, problematic lyrics.
Yeah.
But then there was Minor Threat and Fugazi and Bad Religion. And, you know, all these bands that were talking about such great things.
And there was the positive, what we call PC punks. And once I crossed in my early 20s, I was like, oh, wait, they're the good ones. Like the Pinkerton Thugs and Os Rotten and The Pissed and A Global Threat. Bands that were actually speaking out about stuff. That was when I really, I think as I got into my late teens and early 20s, got a further, I think, away from the nihilistic kind of self-hating punk, which I still like. There's a big part of me that still loves all that, and more like the we just say things because we can say them.
Edgy.
Yeah. That's a problem I've always had with a certain sect of punk rock, is that there are people who believe that the that saying brash things and saying off-color things and fancying themselves as iconoclastic is the end goal of punk rock, not a tool towards the end goal, which is human rights and treatment of people equally. And I think, yeah, it's weird. I definitely, there's a part of me that loves who I was as a teenager, because I do think that I was like struggling with a lot, and I still managed to treat people as well as I possibly could at that age. But then there's also a big part of me that kept my mouth shut when people around me did a lot of things. And
yeah,
there's a guilt and anger that I feel at my younger self for that. But I try to remember he was hurting and I'll choke up. That's something I'm working on in therapy, is trying to forgive, you know, to know where that part of yourself was, that young self was coming from, you know?
Yeah. So I was sexually abused as a child as well. And I think that for me, it was a constant build of pressure and trauma, and to the point where I didn't have a full-on crisis around the sexual abuse until I was in my mid-40s. That building pressure, I mean, how are you feeling about that through the years into your adulthood? Was there a point in time where it just really came to a head for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's always been. I mean, I was an alcoholic. I lived for so long in a world of trying to numb myself and self-hatred, never liking myself, never giving myself an inch. And in some ways, it's part of the reason why I did fairly well, like why I was able to make a TV show, why I've done all the things I've done in stand-up and music, because I would push myself so hard to a point where I don't think I was enjoying. I mean, I would break down all the time, you know. At 30, you know, I had a wife and a son, and I wasn't changing. I was, my drinking would explode, and when I was drunk, I would just be awful. Thankfully, I wasn't physically abusive to my wife and son, but I was definitely verbally abusive, angry, just unpredictable. And at 30, that was when I had my first of like a major wake-up call of like, I need to stop. And so I quit drinking in 2010. And I still to this day, I'm over 15 years without drinking.
That's great.
Yeah. But I have never fully embraced liking myself. I can't even say it without tears coming up.
Yeah.
As you know, when you're abused sexually at a certain age, it warps everything. in ways you don't even know. You're just always, and I think like I am probably a bit vulnerable and doughy right now. And that's probably why the Arson Charge record, it is why I made this record with these dudes, was I'm processing a lot of that now. I'm doing EMDR. I think I had moments, but I think it's been in my 40s and really the last year where I have been like, I need to face the terrible ways that this shapes me and my self-image and self-worth.
And screaming in a punk band, it comes out. It's almost like an EMDR of punk rock. You know, you've got all this like activity and you got your guitar players over here and he's thrashing around and your drummer is, she's like just hitting the cymbals so hard. And then you're kind of like, just things are just coming out. And it kind of models that same modality of EMDR. It's chaos, but it's controlled chaos in a certain way.
There's also a group therapy type quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
The song that ultimately people really have connected with this album is called For the Damned. And it's, I wrote it for victims of the Catholic Church. It's about that and about what happened, and a song of solidarity to victims of Catholic abuse. Yeah, there are people that come out and they say, man, thank you. You know, they hug me. It's hard because I am such a flawed person. I think anybody who's been in a situation like this knows that you're always struggling. Like, it doesn't go away, but the message doesn't change. What they did was, and the way they're handling it is wrong, and it is inept, and it is not enough. And I think I try to remember that. And I see that people connect with that. So it almost becomes a group therapy form of thing, like where people will tell me like, hey, this means a lot. I'm with you, you know, that kind of a thing. So,
yeah, the screaming along to the songs and being in the crowd, being on the floor, you know, a lot of punk shows on the floor and total group therapy, even the rituals of slam dancing, stage diving, all those things have a group therapy sort of quality to them.
The irony of it is that it is very mass-like. It's very church-like. It's, you know when to chant along, you know when not to, you know. There are rules.
We've made our own church.
Yeah, we have. And one that is imperfect, like humans are, but is not nearly as problematic and has wrought as much damage as the Catholic Church has for centuries.
I totally relate to what you're talking about before, about essentially running from what had happened, and either it's metaphorically or actually running. I never really slow down. I'm always kind of on the go, and I've been like that for many years. I've slowed down now that I've been diagnosed with bipolar, medicated. I've found a bit of a calm. But one time I was talking to my counselor and she's like, well, why are you always so busy doing things? Can you just relax, you know, sit down and read a book? I'm like, no, I'm running. Like, I'm running away. And then it dawned on me, okay, I'm running away from what had happened.
I have an album, a stand-up album called Take the Sandwich. The album name is about how if elderly people offer you a sandwich, take it. Because it's not about the sandwich. It's about giving them purpose.
Yeah.
But in it, that's what I say. I'm like, you run all of your early life and you're running and it's high school and then graduation and you're running and then it's your first job and then it's a relationship and you're running and you're running and then you get to 40 and you stop and you're like, I'm going to settle down. And then you realize life was running behind you the whole time and it catches up and it's like, hey, I was trying to stop you. I've been yelling for you. And that's what it felt like, is like when I hit 40, my son, he graduated, my ex and I split. We're still very close, but it was time. My ex had dealt with a lot of the ups and downs, and I'm alone for the first time in 20-something years where I'm on my own. My son is building his life. That was when it all hit me.
Mm-hmm.
My ex-wife is a social worker. She gave this great analogy, and she's like, a lot of people will go into therapy like it's home improvement. They're remodeling. I want to do things differently, you know, and you start ripping up your flooring and then you get to the asbestos and you're like, oh, Jesus, if I dig into that, it's going to be air. It's going to get, I'll just put some new flooring over it. We'll deal with that later. Or you drill into the asbestos, and as you know, as I'm sure you've dealt with, it kicks up in the air and it stays up there for a while. And I think, but it is the work that I have done to remove that toxic. Being sexually abused changes everything. It changes your sexuality. It changes how you view other people, you view yourself. It's awful. You got to dig into it at some point, and it sucks. It's painful.
I was under this assumption that I would uncover all these things that I can't remember, bring in all these details and these visuals and things that had happened and why this. What ended up happening is I ended up just working on listening to my body, breathing, paying attention to how I was feeling certain ways. And things did come up, but it's almost like protected myself from the asbestos or something. And
yeah,
I got as much as I needed out of the home renovation project. And then I was comfortable with my surroundings.
I think that that's a huge part of it. I think there are a lot of ways to go for different personality types. For some it's, and I think I'm kind of getting to that point similar, because I do the same thing. There are just things that end in black that I don't remember.
Exactly.
And I'm like, if only I could remember more. And my current therapist was like, for what reason? What are you going to do with that?
Digging for trauma.
Validation that I should feel this hurt or this damaged. It's any number of things. For, I don't know. Like when she asked me, I was like, I can't answer that. And I think there's something to learning to live with it. Breathe through it. Listen to your body. Know when certain things are coming up, because I'm sure you're starting to realize, like, is this ever going to end? Is there an end to this? Or is this just, you have a hitch in your step and you got to learn to do everything with that.
That was my conversation with Ben Roy of Arson Charge, benroycomedy.com/arsoncharge. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out screentherapy.threadless.com. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.
Programmer here at CJSF. If you donated to FunDrive, thank you. We appreciate your loyalty to supporting grassroots independent voices and helping us rise higher and reach further.
Thank you for listening.